news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is nearly 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. A number of things to get to today. First of all, it is an absolutely gorgeous morning. Cool, but it's going to be a great day. And the stretch of weather right through the weekend is going to be A+. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Number of things to get to, including like if the tree falls in the woods, you know, nobody hears it. What's it matter? Something like that. There's just, you know,
I was close.
I was like 71% of that. But anyway, if a debate happens, uh-huh. And nobody, a critical debate at a crucial time, but nobody
is around to hear,
witnesses the debate.
Yeah.
Did it really happen at all? And that's what some people are crying foul about, the debate that was held at Government Plaza on
Tuesday. No. I guess it was Monday night.
Monday night. Despite looming election for an open congressional seat, members of the press barred from attending a debate hosted by the Mobile Chamber and two TV networks. I guess it was ALA, Fox 10 here in Mobile, and they've got a sister station up in Montgomery, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Is that SFA, I think?
SFA. So I guess what the plan is to air the debate on those two stations only at some point before the election.
Yeah, is there a date on that, or do you know?
Did they put anything on that? I don't see it.
Because we're coming up. I mean, we're a week and a half away from those runoffs.
Yeah, the runoff is April the 16th. Duncan, who is a spokesperson for one or both of those stations, was vague about when the debate will air. I mean, if it's that big a deal where you have disallowed the press from being there,
mm-hmm.
and I guess it was just... there were a few people there, but not many. They were all invited, I guess. Almost like a spring practice where the big wigs can be there and nobody else can. Anyway, it's kind of unusual. I never remember when we talked about this debate. I was kind of like surprised. I said, there's a debate tonight?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. So they didn't publicize it, probably to keep the people from being too furious about it, because if you don't publicize it, then you're not teasing people to come downtown to Government Plaza and be there. But those who did go, I guess, were members of the press, but if they were not involved with either of those TV stations, I don't think they were allowed in.
Yeah, and, you know, I read a recap of the debate on Tuesday from, they're our news partner, 1819news.com,
yeah.
Especially with our tightness with Jeff Poor.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, yeah, I could see how you could be frustrated if you weren't invited, but what effect, really, is a debate between two Republicans or a debate between two Democrats?
Mm-hmm.
What effect is that going to have? I mean, I guess you could argue that it could swing the race one way or the other, but, you know, I was looking through the responses from both Brubaker and Dobson in that debate, and 99% agreement on most things, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to the critical things. Now, you do get a chance in a debate to see how polished someone is.
Yep.
And honestly, I mean, I've loved everything that Dobson has had to say since she's been coming in and talking with us. But Brubaker, there's no way around not acknowledging that he has the experience and
name recognition in Montgomery for sure.
Yeah, and he's able to, in some of these topics, say what he has done as a legislator and a little bit more inside working information on how things work in a place like Congress, whether it's state Congress or in D.C. But, I mean, how different are the two candidates going to be? I don't think it's a huge deal that I don't even think it'd be a huge deal if it didn't air on TV before the election. But Dobson, we'll see if she made up enough ground, because, you know, and we'll see if Daniels made up ground. Both of them, especially Daniels compared to figures, pretty far behind after the runoff. Dobson had less ground to make up, but it's going to be really interesting to see. Plus, you got to think about what's that turnout even going to look like.
I know, and it's crazy. It's not going to be great. And again, it seems like we're just shouting into the spring breeze here. We're talking about this debate for one, and I think it's just the principle of the whole thing. You have a debate, in the biggest city in the district, mm-hmm. and nobody's allowed in.
Well, you heard John Wall's take on it, didn't you? No. The GOP, Alabama GOP chairman.
They had to sign off on it, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure about. I bet they did. I mean, mm-hmm. it's the Republican Party, but Wall said something around something kind of like AL.com. They're so liberal. He's surprised they even wanted to go to the debate. Now,
but you had the Democrats there too.
Were they also
debating?
So. I thought it was just the two Republicans that were debating.
I might.
Maybe if they were on TV, we'd know.
At least one of the four candidates seemed unaware local press could not attend. Yeah, Democratic candidate Shamari Figures, following a news conference in which he touted endorsements from the Mobile County Legislative Delegation, asked an AL.com journalist if he was planning to cover the debate.
Now, and it would have been John Sharp with AL.com covering that.
Probably.
And I support John Sharp. I like the guy. He's great
for us.
Great journalist and much less slanted than a lot of the takes you'll see from that site. But, I guess they'll try to clear that up next time, if there is a next time. Now, you've also got this controversy that I think we were the first to discuss earlier this week.
I think, we were tipped off by a friend of mine and Martin on the text line that he saw this sign on Highway 90.
Yeah. So a Brew Baker for Congress sign says, please vote runoff April 16th. And underneath Brew Baker U.S. Congress, it says for Mobile, which makes sense, right? But they use the official City of Mobile logo for the M in the word Mobile. And there's been pushback from the city.
Talking about it the next day. Mm-hmm. Candace Cooksey reached out to us from Mayor Sandy Stimson's office.
Right.
And I've got to remember.
Basically,
she said that he can't do that.
I've got the statement here. Any official City of Mobile logo being used on CD2 signage is an illegal use, and the City of Mobile has not endorsed a candidate in that race. The campaign has been notified that they do not have permission to use the city's logo on their political signs. Now, 1819's Erica Thomas dug into this a little bit. She said, after learning of the misstep, the Brew Baker campaign said it was working to cover the city logo. Brew Baker campaign rep David Mowry said, quote, this was simply overzealous local supporters who didn't understand that would be a copyright infringement.
Okay.
We are taking steps to get the M part of the logo, which we aren't supposed to use, covered up. Mowry said the supporters' intentions were pure, and they didn't mean to violate the copyright or deceive anyone. There's also been a video circulated that shows the Dobson campaign signs covered by Brew Baker signs. You know how they'll put it right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
That happens in pretty much, every race, every election cycle, you're going to hear somebody doing that or somebody complaining that that's being done. Now, the Brew Baker campaign said they believe the signs were likely staged to discredit the campaign. So they must be referencing covering up the Dobson signs as being staged. I wasn't sure if they were saying somebody put the Brew Baker for Mobile with the City of Mobile logo up there.
That was
the Dobson supporters, because that wouldn't make much sense, right? It also wouldn't make sense to cover your own sign either with your opponent's sign unless you just did it for the video or picture to put it out there.
Yeah, I don't think it would. But, these things get a little squirrely when you get down the stretch. Brew Baker, and I suppose he has kept his pledge. Dobson, her campaign has been run with taking some shots at Brew Baker. She's behind, you got to do something, I guess. Brew Baker said he's not going to go negative. He made that pledge. And as far as Dobson's campaign, I would say, listen to her words. I think she's run a fairly clean campaign. I understand mm-hmm. there's going to be some negative ads or negative words. But again, Brew Baker feeling pretty confident in what's coming up, the election, and he has made that pledge. He's not going to go negative. How do you campaign differently, Dalton? And I'm just asking because I was thinking about this. I don't know what the answer is. How do you campaign differently if you know turnout is going to be low? Do you have to put out a message that is more urgent? Do you take more shots at your opponent? Again, you're right about the fact that they agree on nearly everything. This is on mm-hmm. the Republican side, obviously. Might be bigger differences between the two Democrats. I'm not sure. I think they're both fairly popular. But how do you run a campaign if you know you want to get out the vote,
yeah.
But you know even your effort to get out the vote is only going to get out so much vote.
Well, you know, in radio and TV, you've got what they call your P1s.
Yep.
Folks who are listening or watching.
All the time.
It's the P1s who are going to show up to vote. Mm-hmm. The P1s for the Dobson and the Brubaker and the Daniels and Figures campaigns who are going to show up to vote on April 16th. It's kind of like you just got to build up that home court advantage, or at least that sounds like the way that Jeff Poor has described this campaign from either of the candidates in the Republican runoff. Got Brubaker trying to pump up the numbers in the Wiregrass region and around his home district there in Montgomery.
Yep.
And you've got Dobson, who's from Monroe County, trying to boost her numbers in Mobile. And that's been
and she's got support in
right.
Mobile.
But they've got to get these people who are going out to vote to really want to get out and vote, especially in a runoff like this. They've mentioned, and Dobson mentioned it when she came in with us last time, spring break. There's going to be some schools out for spring break that week, which will definitely affect some of that turnout. And they're hoping that people can, you know, absentee vote if they're going to be leaving the county or leaving the state.
It's going to be interesting, Dalton, if it ends up to be Brubaker and Figures, and you have it's
Mobile versus Montgomery.
That's what it is.
And then you've got people in Mobile will have to decide.
Right. Do I go Democrat because I feel like Figures is going to take better care of all of our interests down here.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some that will.
I think so. I know I won't be. I'm going to be the Republican till the end, but that's definitely going to be a situation that comes up for a lot of people, especially some local leaders. That's been another thing I've seen too, though. Endorsements are supposed to swing people towards a candidate, right? It seems to me when there's an endorsement made, the conversation I see on the text line is some endorsements are driving people away from those candidates.
Wow.
So we all know it, but a good endorsement is a good thing. You get endorsed by someone who's not as well liked for one reason or the other,
not
it could be
thing.
A bad thing.
Yeah.
And we've seen some of that.
818 with Dan and Dalton.
823 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in just a minute, 251-343-0106. Plus, a discussion with Rob Hulbert from Lanyap on the way in about 10 minutes. I've been talking about it. Come out and see me. I think Dan will make a stop by this weekend.
Yes, sir.
At the second annual Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo, Bicentennial Park. Let me rephrase that. The beautiful, the stunning Bicentennial Park in Stockton, Alabama. It's an all-day event, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., but you'll get out in time to watch the final four games if that's what you're interested in. But they've got all kinds of really great things set up for us there in Stockton on Saturday. They'll start the morning with Kenny Weiss Sr. and his son KJ, world champion turkey callers. They've got a heck of a demo that they do, and they get folks to come up there and try their hand at calling some turkeys. It's really, really cool what they do. And then right after that, we're going to move right into Captain Bobby Abruscato, and then all kinds of great music. And the way that Chamber Director Christina Pittman laid it out yesterday, it sounds like it's going to be great for the kids as well, as they have Jay and friends from the Reptile Bus. So they're going to have an axe-throwing inflatable, which I can't wait to check out on Saturday. I think I saw something about rock climbing as well. I mentioned the music is great. The food is great this year. I think they're going to have some beer out there as well. So come check it out. Come see us, the Discover North Baldwin Outdoor Expo, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday at Bicentennial Park in Stockton. We'll have some FM Talk 106.5 giveaway as well. So come by and see us.
That's going to be great. Weather's going to be great. The event is wonderful. The park is beautiful and really, really cool. And it's close, Mobile. You get over that Africa Town, Dolly Parton bridge, you hang a left and you're there pretty much.
Looking at the text line really quickly, Michael says, with the race between Caroline and Dick, I like that we're using first names.
Yeah.
I think Mrs. Dobson is leading, but that's mostly because of people I've talked with and seeing at least a 10-1 margin in her favor of signs around Mobile. I would imagine, Michael, you drive around Montgomery or some of those cities over there on that part of the district, you're going to see probably outnumbered Brubaker signs. He said also there's two of those, he says, bad Dick Brubaker signs on Spring Hill at 65. So he must be talking about the ones that use the City of Mobile logo, which they've been asked to take down. Pete text again, and not sure how we could confirm this, but he says a tall person in cowboy boots, tall older man in cowboy boots, has been offering to pay random folks at Home Depot to put Brubaker signs over Dobson signs. And I said, well, it'd be great if there was video. We could confirm this. Pete says, reported by a Dobson campaign worker who asked a guy on the side of the road why he was putting a Brubaker sign over a Dobson sign. By that description, I have a good guess who that is. So, yeah, I guess the games are being played as we head into April 16th. By the way, those debates we were talking about, those will air. The Republican debate on Fox 10. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. The Republican debate will air April 8th at 4 p.m. So
it's Tuesday?
I think Monday.
Monday.
And the debate between the Democrats will air on Tuesday at 4 p.m., both of those on Fox 10, and they'll stream them online. That's the info you were asking for.
Then. Yeah, okay. What an interesting race that's turned out to be. And one of the reasons it's turned out to be an interesting race, really, is the effort and the presentation of her thoughts by Caroline Dobson. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's done a really good, you know, she's out of nowhere. She's this year's Katie Britt.
Yeah.
And even less known because Katie, of course, politically, everybody knew, and her ascension to chief of staff for Senator Shelby.
Yeah, she had a pretty well, I wouldn't say pretty well-known story. I mean, I didn't know who Katie Britt was until she entered her name in the race.
Yeah.
But she was known in the political circles.
She was known in the political circles, which, as one of the guests that Jeff had the other day, talking about the
BCA.
Well, the farm system.
Okay.
She was president of the Alabama political, about the Alabama government, student government.
I guess.
So she was well known, and a lot of people come through that pipeline and into state politics.
Well, you know, Mitch.
So politicians themselves knew who she was.
It's no surprise, and maybe Katie Britt wouldn't want to hear a lot of. She wouldn't want her constituents to hear this, but Mitch McConnell had some glowing words for her over the weekend. I believe she spoke in an event in Kentucky.
She did at Louisville.
Yeah, and he was saying, you know, all the same things you hear some of the older members of Congress saying about Katie Britt, that they're very impressed with her here in her first term. So,
well, and she was also talking, I thought it was the headline that I saw was had to do with, you know, who some of her best friends who happen to be Democrats are. She's mm-hmm. got friends in Washington, D.C. who are Democrats, and she was like, you know, this is the way it should be done.
People are kind of pointing to her as someone who's able to work across the aisle. And you saw that with Fetterman, I think, when he was going through the big medical process where he had the stroke and couldn't speak. And Katie Britt, really the only Republican I know that said, hey, we came in together. He's a good guy, and I'm wishing. Several said they were wishing the best for him, but it seemed like Katie Britt kind of a little closer with Fetterman, who's kind of made a turn as a centrist here over these last few months. Now, wolf in sheep's clothing, whatever you want to say, he is angering a lot of the far left Democrats, but that's necessary where he is running in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
it's a. I don't know what you it's blue collar Democrat. You think mm-hmm. of Pittsburgh, Steel City, all of that, and so while they may vote Democrat, a lot of them are really not cool with a lot of the wokeness and stuff like that, and the anti-Israel rhetoric.
Yeah, he's definitely down on that. Britt mentioned Democratic Senators John Fetterman, Peter Welch, and Cory Booker.
Oh wow,
as among her greatest friends. So anyway, she says that's the way it should be done, and she says she learned from Shelby, but I think she's just. Look, she speaks on the policies, and she never gives you any indication that she's down with any of the left policies or the left-leaning policies that we've come across here in the last few years. She's all about the mommy at home and wants her kids to grow up in an America that they can be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But just in terms of having lunch and having friendship and kicking ideas around, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and, there's probably a lot of Republicans and Democrats who shout at each other on TV.
And don't, you know.
That don't off TV, but a lot of them wouldn't admit they're friendly with them
right.
in any kind of media.
Yeah, she's not afraid to. On her list, Senator P. Diddy, he's not.
No?
So she's okay with that. It's 8:30 with Dan and Dalton. FM Talk 106.5, 8:35 on Mobile Mornings. And we're going to turn our attention to our friend Rob Holbert from Lanyap, who keeps an eye on a lot of things and breaks some stories wide open, and they do a good job over there. Rob, you got a good crew, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll let them know you like them.
Yeah, please do.
And cover story of the Lagniappe this week, Rob. You got Hank Aaron there on the front. And, of course, folks around here know who he is. What are you guys talking about this week?
Tommy Hicks did a really nice piece on it. It's the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. And it's a really nice piece of just kind of going through that time for Hank. And it was obviously, I think a lot of people probably know the story, that it was very, very difficult time because there was a tremendous amount of pressure and, unfortunately, a tremendous amount of racist activity and people threatening him and saying terrible things to him. And just on top of that, just pressure, even the commissioner of baseball was really putting a lot of pressure on him and didn't even show up for the event when he broke the record, that kind of stuff. So
wow.
it was a lot on Hank to do at that point. And so it's a really cool story. Tommy did a great job with it. It's a nice remembrance, and they'll be commemorating that this season in Atlanta as well. So,
well, and I was also going to say, a lot of eyes in the baseball world will be on Alabama this year as they have that game in Birmingham later this summer. I think St. Louis, and I can't remember who the other team that's going to play in that. But that's a nod to the baseball that's been played in this state, and you can't talk about that without the Hank Aarons and the Willie Mays and those folks.
Right, yeah, 100%.
Hey, Rob, I remember that year. I think that the commissioner, I could have this wrong, but they opened the season in Cincinnati, and I think the commissioner attended those two games, and I don't know if he tied the record or I forget what.
He tied the record in Cincinnati, but the Braves were going to have him sit out three games to try to have him break the record in Atlanta. And the commissioner basically said he would be suspended if he didn't play two of the three games.
Huh.
And that's when he tied the record with one of those games and then went, I think, 0-for-3 in the second game. But he did sit one game out, and then he broke the record the first game back in Atlanta.
And if I remember also from the stories, there were actually snipers on top of the roof at Atlanta.
I don't know about the snipers part, but he did have a bodyguard with him at all points at that time. Was coming in and out of the hotel rooms and through the service entrance and things like that to try to stay away from the public.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. So I'm really interested in checking out that cover story from Tommy Hicks this week in the latest Lagniappe. Also in the latest Lagniappe, they'll catch your opinion article, Damn the Torpedoes, and you're talking about signs on telephone poles. Now, we've spent a lot of this first half hour talking about political campaign signs and kind of the back and forth between the Brubaker and Dobson campaigns about who's covering up whose sign, and then you always get the questions like, when are these political signs supposed to be picked up? And the rule is, I think, a week after the elections, you have to have them up.
Yeah, I think that, but the way it usually goes is never.
I was thinking I thought the rule was the decade after the election.
Maybe it's 7 years, not 7 days.
I mean, you've got signs out there for people who are dead still. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I kind of had a two-part rant for the last 2 weeks about trash. I've got litter. Last week, I just basically, the city's had some new language to try to stop litter, but it's really one of these things we have to stop, because of the only way to stop it is really just the behavior of people. And I think the only way to stop that is just to kick it the hell out of everybody. If you throw a cigarette butt out the window,
I agree.
You kick it.
I agree. Well,
but then I was reminded during my, and I had intended to rant about the proliferation of signs being tacked to telephone poles, but I didn't get to it. And I had several people who wrote to me and said, but you forgot this. I said, okay, I'll get on that this week. And that's the thing, that we see. I mean, to me, it just seems like a no-brainer. I mean, this is litter that has somebody's phone number on it.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually like putting the litter out there and here, call me.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's litter to actually call me at this point. And we should be calling them and giving them tickets and giving them about 30 minutes to come pull all that garbage off the sign, off the poles.
Yeah.
There's a piece of equipment that allows you to tack those things up super high so people can't take them. And that's, you know, it's just a, it's, I mean, it's crazy to me how much of that I see now. It is like, especially the further west you get in Mobile, it seems like there's a tremendous amount more of that.
Mm. Yeah,
they don't seem to allow it as much downtown and in Midtown, or, you know, down in the Garden District. But it's a problem.
Yeah, it's always let me buy your house or stump grinding. I wonder if those are
stump
like the
grinders.
The
stump
same
grinders
people.
Are out there, man. Yeah, the stump grinders are in full force. You know, there's the roof leak repair.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's everything. But I mean, I get that people don't want to pay for advertising. They don't want to do that. But I mean, it's gotten a point where it's just like sign over sign over sign. I mean, it's just trash everywhere.
Yeah. I was looking, by the way, about telephone poles themselves, not needed for as much for telephone lines anymore, but other utilities is why the reason that they still exist, like phone mm-hmm. booths just went away. Telephone poles maybe at some point are going to go away if we have wireless electricity.
No. I think landline is going to make a retro comeback.
Okay.
You think it's coming back? Yeah, I think so. I think rotary. The weirdest thing I ever saw tacked to a telephone pole or a utility pole, if we want to call it that, was two huge jars of mayonnaise.
What?
That was over on Florida Street. Yeah, I saw that one day. I just had to stop and take a picture of it. I'm like, this is bizarre. But,
that's ridiculous.
Is there a competition out there that we don't know about for the most ridiculous?
I don't know, and I don't know if anybody got in trouble for that. I don't know if the Hellman's people were called or whatever, but it was very strange.
Well, if you start seeing signs out there on telephone poles that say, listen to Mobile Mornings, it was not me and Dan.
Yeah, no. Not you.
It was, it's like Brubaker would be overzealous fans of ours.
Yeah, that's exactly. We'll blame our...
Well, you know, that whole argument about, you know, once political, to me, you know, when political campaigns devolve to the point they're arguing about sign stealing and what's
placement.
On people's signs, that's not a good sign. I mean, no pun intended. It's not a good sign for one of the campaigns. I think somebody's really struggling at that point.
Well, Dan brought up a good question. We were talking about these two runoffs last half hour. It's a runoff, first off, so nothing else on the ballot. If you're voting Republican, you got that one race. If you're voting Democrat, you got the other race in AL2. What do you think would drive people out to the polls? We've got spring break. It's not a major election with all these other amendments and stuff on there. Who are the people that show up? I mean, other than me, who are the people that show up to these runoffs? Because I imagine we're going to have another low turnout. I mean, you've got to be really fired up for one candidate or the other.
Yeah, free chicken sandwiches might get it done. I don't know. That's about it. It's just not. Yeah, it's not going to be a big turnout. We know it's going to be a lousy turnout. People aren't that interested. They're not that tuned in. And it's just going to be the usual thing. It's going to be a very low turnout race, I think.
Is an upset more likely when you've got a lower turnout? I would guess it would be.
I don't know that it is or isn't. I mean, it's always turnout to everything for everybody, but if somebody's able to mobilize a small number of people and the other one can't, then I guess you could have an upset. But it just seems to me that it's probably going to be in just a kind of across the board malaise that affects the whole campaign.
Last week, Rob, we talked about this story involving Matrix LLC and how much Auburn University has paid out just in this last year, more than $1 million to Matrix LLC.
This is the story that gave me nightmares, but go ahead.
What's the response been since then? I know you're probably still working on something like this, but what have you seen since the story came out?
Well, I mean, the response from Auburn is that they don't want to provide any actual information about what Matrix does. They don't want to give me any budgetary information for who's getting paid. But when you look at this institute that just took on an $800,000 contract to Matrix, that all of a sudden, you know, that's a massive increase in expenditures by this institute, which is basically shoved in the back of their engineering building. It's a little place with a couple of offices. All this money's coming from Alabama Power to that institute, and a lot of the people who work for the institute used to work for Alabama Power. They used to work for Matrix, and Alabama Power has paid Matrix over the years. There's a lot of stuff there that is really strange. I'm asking for a budget. You know, I mean, they're in a public university that gets hundreds of millions of dollars of tax money every year. They're in public building. There ought to be a budget, but they have not given it to me yet. So we'll see. It's kind of the same dance that goes on over and over again. And when you start these stories, people are like, we don't really have anything for you. You're gonna have to write to so and so and request a record. So far they say, hey, we're real happy with whatever Matrix is doing. We just we're not going to tell you what they're doing.
Yeah, that story.
A little sketchy.
Oh my gosh.
It's a very controversial group. I think that it's at this point been shown that they've been involved in a lot of very unscrupulous behavior in terms of, with media and trying to pay off, for coverage, to pay for coverage to, they paid a private investigator to follow the head of the Southern company. There are things like that that have come out that have been in court records. I think the question of why the university would want to get involved with that is a big one. But when you look at who's paying for that, what group is that institute that is paying them so much money, you're shaming the same old people that were paying them over at Alabama Power, the people who are in charge of that are involved in this institute. It just looks like there's a big nexus between that and Alabama Power, this institute, and Matrix again.
I don't know how Dalton feels about it. I think it's only a matter of time before I draw a sign up with a caricature of me and say, can be bought for news coverage, and I'll put it on a telephone pole in Florida, Street, see if I get any reaction.
See what happens, Dan. It's a good sign.
You can't make a shot if you don't take it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That wouldn't be, I would say, ethical behavior.
I know.
And
I know.
While we're talking about ethics.
Yes, I thought we might get to this.
The bill here, championed by State Rep Matt Simpson out of Daphne, it's tough to, you got to read the bill, or at least read coverage of the bill like I've done with Kyle Hamrick and his articles there. But it's interesting the dynamic here with Simpson pushing these changes to the ethics laws. And then, of course, you've got the director of the Ethics Commission who's against that, but also the state attorney general coming out against that and saying, I guess it doesn't go too far. Now we'll see if this thing can make it through the Senate. But some pretty big changes for a big population of the state that works under those rules.
Well, there's some things about it. When you look at it, I think some of the media, a lot of the media that has covered it has completely only covered one part of it and has ignored all the stuff that it would do in terms of changing some of the things going on with the Ethics Commission itself, which is out of control and not being taken care of at all. That part would make the director have to come back in front of the Senate to be reaffirmed every 5 years, which I think in a perfect world, that shouldn't have to happen. But when the Ethics Commission itself has had an empty seat for almost 3 years now and has people who are expired on the commission, three of the five seats basically are expired or empty, and nobody's taking care of it. The governor's by law supposed to reappoint. She has not done so. You've got a lot of behavior over there that is really problematic, and that's some of the precipitating events on all of this, which is ignored completely by a lot of the people who are complaining about it, including the attorney general, who has done nothing to make that any better either.
He doesn't want to have that confrontation, or what is it?
I don't really know what is going on with him. He in a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit that involves the old Mabel Amos thing that I've written about a million times. Steve Marshall accused Tom Allbritton of self-dealing and fraud, both of which are criminal activities.
Right.
Yet did nothing to investigate that criminally that I can see. And they claim, statute of limitations. I wrote about it well within the statute of limitations. They just didn't do anything. There's some of the complaints, they say, this decriminalizes a bunch of stuff. That's not true. What it does is the Ethics Commission no longer will handle those things, which they didn't really anyway. When it gets down to prosecution, the Ethics Commission, all they've ever done is push it to a district attorney or the attorney general's office, which often has the I mean, they have the right to say, no, we don't want to prosecute it or not, and has pushed back often. When you go look at the list of people who've actually been prosecuted for criminal activity, for felonious activity by under the ethics law in the last 3, 4, 5 years, it's a pretty slim number.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of what goes on with the Ethics Commission at this point is they work out deals, basically come in and say, hey, we won't prosecute you criminally if you plead guilty. They don't do a lot of actual
prosecution,
you know, rulings. Well, they don't do prosecution anyway. They never did. It's always with them. It's they do misdemeanor or they do, they come up with remedies that involve fines and things like that, but not jail time.
Right.
And so they kind of hold that sword over your head. And I think that's a lot of what's going on with it. And then the other issue is, there are 300,000 people that are covered by the ethics law. I mean, that gets down to teachers and
right.
people who don't have any real power to spend money. And you can, I know when I used to work out of South, I had to fill out an ethics form. I had nothing. I mean, I was, a low level person there, but you have to fill one out and you run into the issue of possibly running afoul of the yep. Ethics Commission if you have something wrong. So, I mean, there are two sides to this thing. I think that's, it's a law that I think, there needed to be some things cleaned up, and I certainly think the part of the bill that puts more pressure on the commission itself is needed.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind if D.C. took a look at maybe their ethics laws as well for Congress and Senate up there, that ain't going to happen. Rob,
don't expect that.
Latest edition of Lanyap on stands now, and I encourage people to sign up online, lanyapmobile.com. We really appreciate you coming on with us. We kept you a little late today, but thanks for sticking around.
Guys. Y'all have a great day.
You got it. Right. Rob Hobert. So if you want to find some of the highest level of misbehavior in the state of Alabama, go check out the Ethics Commission. See what they're up to. From their name, you wouldn't expect it, but there you have it. 8:53, Dan and Dalton. And we'll tell you what Jeff Poore's got going on his show on the way.
5 till 9, FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings, a segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett, his crew, they do great work. And they've been doing that great work for over a decade and a half on the Gulf Coast, making junk disappear. I had a great little conversation with Trey just yesterday. And, man, they've got a lot of reviews. Not just reviews, but 5-star reviews on Google. And all of them left by real people who have used the local services of Trey Bennett and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. This one just from a week ago. JB left this review. He said, "The two young men who came to our house were delightful, so helpful, and made quick work of loading a truck with junk. They also," he said, "I will call this company again when I need fast and friendly junk removal." And those two words right there couldn't be more true. Fast and friendly. That's how they work at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And the entire process is easy. They've kind of streamlined this thing over the years. So if you've got some junk that needs to go, give them a call. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the phone number. You can also set that appointment up online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, featuring free on-site estimates. The pricing is all-inclusive, so they don't hit you with hidden charges after it's all said and done. And often you can get same-day service. They will call when they're on the way. So check them out. 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
See if you recognize any of these names or positions. You probably will. Caroline Dobson's going to be on Jeff Poore's show at 9:30. Also, Dick Brubaker will be on Jeff's show at straight up 11 o'clock, 11:05. And also, Stan McDonald, Alabama Ethics Commissioner. He's jumping right into the fire here.
I hope McDonald was listening to us this hour.
Yeah.
I'm sure he loved hearing all of that.
Boy, that Brennan and Orwick, they really bring it, don't they?
I'm looking forward to conversation we're going to have tomorrow, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Some Final Four talk with Bama headed out to play UConn on Saturday night. And are you going? I would love to hear from you on the text line. I know we got some huge Bama fans, maybe fewer big UConn fans that listen to us.
It cost you to do all that.
That's what a lot of these articles are about out there. So Yellowhammer saying, before you even get into the tickets for the Final Four, the game is in Phoenix, by the way, and I know a bunch of Bama fans have headed to the West Coast in droves over the years for football games, but this will be in Phoenix. You can imagine travel is expensive from Alabama, and the hotel, could be looking at upwards of $2,000 per person just to get to Phoenix.
So and get a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
This is before that you buy the ticket.
Right. So if you're two people, you're looking at least $4,000 to get out there, depending on how you travel. Mm-hmm. Four people, you're looking at maybe $8,000 just for the travel and room. Then you look at the tickets. And let's see. This is for the women's Final Four. I'm trying to find the men's. Of course, the Iowa-UConn women's game. Those tickets are outrageous. Looks like they're trading at around $900. But for the men's games, I thought I had the cheapest ticket around here. I think you're looking at about $600 just to get in. $600 a ticket.
That's an arena. That's a stadium in Phoenix. So you could have. There's not a good chance you're going to have.
Yeah, you might have some terrible.
You'd be watching the video board the whole time.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know? But you want to be there.
Wow. But yeah, you want to be there. It'd be worth it if you're a big Bama fan.
8:59, Dan and Dalton. Jeff Ford is on the way next.